And welcome back to the Labor Podcast. We are... How back are we?
I would say we're the normal amount of back. We're just sort of halfway through the season.
Yeah.
I would say that competitively, you and I as a team in this episode are not back at all. I'd say that we're doing quite poorly.
No.
Oh, in that regard, I suppose I'm quite back.
But in the regard of podcast recordings, we're kind of medium so back for reasons that we may or may not ever reveal to the audience.
Oh, right.
Oh, there's sort of a secret backness that the audience will understand like 5 months from now.
Yep. Yeah, very long from now.
Yep.
And it's only annoying that we're saying this now because they're just going to be like, what the fuck are they talking about for months now? But it might make sense eventually. But anyways, in terms of recordings, we're quite back.
We're extremely back in terms of recording this wonderful podcast.
In terms of Adam and I's viability at success, less so. More so on the so over side of things.
Yeah, we're definitely more in the it's so over situation at the end of this episode. Well, it's an interesting episode.
Yeah.
In that there's, I think, quite a lot of we're so back, it's so over. We start off like, really so back.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite the emotional roller coaster. I will admit at the very, I mean, we'll get into the questions as they come up, but I remember thinking at the beginning of this run that it was going to be rather humiliating for me.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say, like, as always, slight foreshadowing for the rest of the season, but, like, in retrospect, I think that both my and a lot of our opinions about where we stood at any given moment in a given run was often quite wrong.
Yep.
Yes.
Like, we often had wildly incorrect perceptions of how so back or so over we were.
This is quite true.
Yeah, and this episode was certainly one of those cases. But I propose we start at the start and, okay, sidebar. I'm getting worried that I realize that's probably like the third time I've said that this season. We need to come up with new words, new phrases.
Wait, what do you mean? You've said what?
Let's start at the start.
Let's start at the start, sure.
Let's start at the start. That's a perfect place to start, is to start at the start.
Maybe that's your new catchphrase.
Well, we do need to honestly retire the it's so back, it's so over bit, like, pretty soon.
I think it's fun.
Yeah, I don't know.
You say we as if we all say that we're so back. I feel like you're just the one who says...
Okay, but you so do. Also, the audience does, but you so do sometimes. I know that I might be the predominant perpetrator.
Predominant perpetrator. That's some fun consonants.
Thank you, professional writer. Anyways, we open with Ben in a ghillie suit, which let's take a moment to hold space for that. How about that?
Let's chat about that, yeah.
Let's hold some space. There's a new phrase for us.
How about we also do the thing where we use cultural references that by the time this podcast is out will be like a month or two later.
Yeah.
Oh. It's already too late.
It's already too late for that.
It's already too late.
But I feel like this is another layover staple, is outdated cultural references.
Yes.
Ooh, you know what I'm actually remembering, Sam, though, right now, speaking of holding space?
Mm-hmm.
We promised that we were going to hold space for our overnight in Narita.
Oh, you're so right.
When this podcast, we said we would talk about it, and we almost forgot.
That's right. That's right. It was a mix of delightful and enchanting.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree more. It's extraordinary.
First of all, first moment of niceness was that, I mean, you had experienced this the day before. I had not. But it was like 3:30 or 4. And thanks to y'all's crazy catch, we were done.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a beautiful sweet spot where it's like, because of the 3.5 hour hiding window, if you catch somebody past, I think it's 3.
Yeah, 3. Yeah.
Then the time they spend hiding will take us to the end of the game day until the sun goes down. And so I think maybe there would have technically been like 15 minutes for us to look at the end, but we were like, that'd be ridiculous. So like when that happens, if you catch somebody at 1 p.m., it's actually bad because then you have
annoying.
To wait around for 3.5 hours for them to hide. And then you'd have to do like 2 hours of looking at the end of the day, which would suck. And then if you find them super late, then it's a late day. But if you find them right around 3 or 3:30, you just get to end the day there if you're a seeker, and it's fantastic.
And I know what you're thinking, dear audience. Narita Airport, that can't be that nice. Where would you possibly have a nice little overnight near Narita Airport?
Oh, the dear audience, they're so confused. Well, what I have to say too, Sam, is like we talked about, we were like, and maybe we'll just stay at the hotel at the airport. Like, maybe we'll just stay there.
Yeah, because super convenient.
And it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, just grab the hotel and whatever, super convenient. But then we were like, no, you know what? Let's go to Narita, the town of Narita. Let's stay there.
Yeah. Because, you know, we thought it'd be nice to have, like, you know, restaurants and shops and stuff like that.
You know.
Which is true.
As far as I can tell, I mean, Sam, you tell me if my read on this is wrong. As far as I can tell, it seems like Narita is, like, trying to make itself into a tourist destination. It's like,
yeah,
they're kind of like, you know, the airport is here, so it would make sense for people to visit, but people don't really visit Narita, but they are trying to build up a little bit of a tourism industry.
Yeah, I don't even actually know how much it's trying, because they had some very impressive looking temple complexes and stuff there.
It's true. No, it's true.
That were just closing when we got there, so we didn't get to see them, but like looking at them from the outside, they looked very impressive. So I have no idea, but like, to a certain extent, it looks like it was already a place that some people visit.
It's true.
Because it's actually, you know, when you walk out of like Narita Central Station, it's not much to write home about. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just like pretty placeless, mid-sized Japanese town slash city with like not the most exciting architecture.
Yeah.
But if you walk just like 5 or 10 minutes to the north, it starts to become like,
yeah, it's amazing.
Charming little small town.
Super
with
charming.
Like tourist shops and stuff. So we were looking at the map for hotels.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were like all the various like airport hotels. Like there was like one like right at the airport that we could have gotten to.
Yeah.
There were a bunch that were like on shuttles and stuff, which I really don't want. I'm an airport shuttle hater. I hate an airport shuttle to
Me
a hotel.
Too.
It's the worst thing.
Despise
the end of your day, you've just gotten off a long flight and you have to wait like
Horrible.
30 minutes.
Horrible.
And it's even worse in the US where you have to go through the whole thing about like they expect a tip. And obviously we'll give a tip, but like tipping cult, anyway, now I'm getting off track, but airport shuttle hotel hater. So that was why I was thinking, okay, let's take trains. We're pro trains to Narita. But most of Narita, it was like, actually, here's a thing that we haven't talked about yet that is a bit of an aside, but I think relevant. It is amazing to me how standardized the Japanese hotel experience is.
Yes, that's true. Like, that's true.
Incredibly so. Where there's like, maybe there's a term for this, but like there seems to be a style of kind of like mid-range hotels that like you get the exact same size of room.
Yep.
The check-in experience, literally like you're talking to a robot who goes through the exact same questions in the exact same order, tells you the exact same things. And then the craziest thing, in my opinion, is they all have the exact same amenities. Like, do you remember like all the toothbrushes and like creams? And,
yeah.
Oh, they had great little amenities. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were always the exact same.
Well, my favorite thing that they all have is they have little pajamas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those are slightly different in each place. And I would wear them every time. I mean, it was awesome.
I will say I did observe this, but there are many parts of the country where this was not the case.
Well, that's true. This was clearly like a type of hotel that we often got into, and it was just like incredibly standardized. But that's to say, not always. Ben and I, in a future episode, will talk about our very atypical, not atypical to Japan, I don't think, but like to us experience that was one of the most terrifying nights of jet lag in my life.
But anyway, we've ended up on quite a tangent. So we were looking for a hotel, right?
Yeah. What I was getting to is like Narita had like a bajillion of hotels that looked like they were exactly this. And then one that was just weirdly like 3 times the price.
Right. But still not a crazy price. Like all the other hotels were cheap and this one was a little pricey, but not crazy.
It was just notable that like all the other ones were like, I think they were somewhere between like 60 and 100 US dollars.
Yeah.
And this other one was like, I don't know, 250, 300, which is more than we often spend. But part of our justification was that we had way underspent on our budget.
We'd way underspent and we had a bunch of time.
Yeah.
It was like, we are going to spend a lot of time in this hotel because it's early. It's a lot more time than we normally would have.
Uh-huh. So we decided to book the weirdly expensive one. And
oh my God.
It was, I mean, you probably would do a better job of describing it, Adam.
It was incredible. I just found it. It's called the Waku Narita-san Monzen for anyone who wants to stay there. W-A-Q-O-O. Every room, at least our rooms, I guess, I don't know every room, our rooms, and we had separate rooms, just to dispel
any
rumors, were like traditional, like Japanese like architecture vibes. Like they had like the wooden sliding doors with the paper windows. Like the images here, Ben, aren't even like good ones of the rooms. Like my room was better than any of these pictures that come up when you even look at this place.
Really? Because these look quite nice.
Yeah, like very, very fancy.
Like a really low to the ground bed. Like you were supposed to take your shoes off when you walked in. Like the whole floor was wooden. Like this really beautiful wood. Like there were like traditional Japanese clothes in each of the rooms. And they like had instructions on how to like wear them and stuff. And so the other thing that they had was like, and I was the only one who experienced this. They had an incredible like heated spa bath thing in the hotel. And it was beautiful.
Isn't that like the onsen?
Yeah, yeah, the onsen.
Yeah, yeah. Because this is like an onsen hotel thing, yeah, which is
yeah,
like a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, it was like this big hot tub basically in this beautiful like room with like all this black stone in it. And like I hung out there for a while and it was amazing. But anyway, that absolutely ruled and ripped. The hotel was incredible. But I would say just as exciting was our dinner experience, which I have to hand it to Sam on. He picked this place from like the, I think just on Google Maps or something.
Which I'm particularly pleased with because it's been a long running thing of Adam critiquing my restaurant picking methodologies. Because to be honest, I've missed in the past.
It's true. Typically your methods do not yield, I think, optimal results. But in this case, it was a huge success.
It was really only just in Charleville-Mézières, I feel like. Like I picked a spot, it was well reviewed on Google. It turned out to be terrible. I don't know if I've gotten it wrong many more times than that. But look, I'll hand credit to Adam. Adam's restaurant recommendation hit rate is incredibly high.
Thank you.
So I know that he is better at this than me. And I know that he does not rely on Google. So I will admit that potentially Google is not the highest hit rate thing. But in this case, I was searching.
No, you crushed it.
And I found this spot.
You crushed it on this.
Because it was like wildly well reviewed. And it seemed charming and small.
Yes. Oh, I think I found it. Was it this place? No, this place is too big.
Here. It's called Retro Restaurant Waka. Same name of the hotel. I wonder what Waka means.
Mm, oh, yes. Yes, here it is. Yep.
So we walk in.
Yes.
And it's a table.
It's a single table. There is a single table there. I think it has six seats at it.
Yeah.
And that is the only seating that is visible in the restaurant. There's like a counter with a little kitchen behind it. And there is a single table with, was it four or six? Four or six seats?
I don't know. One of those two.
And it was like, that's what's there.
And then there was just a guy.
Yep. Just a guy.
And that was it. That was the restaurant.
It was amazing. He handed us menus and we pointed at what we wanted and he brought it. It was fantastic. And it absolutely ruled and ripped.
It was just like an assortment of like random like vegetable-y things and then like
very simple
some fried chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like everything was like the most delightful piece of lettuce I had in my life.
Yeah.
The most delightful carrot.
Incredible.
It was like everything was just stellar and everything was made so much better by the fact that it was just a guy.
No, it was awesome.
We were spending a lot of time trying to figure out like the business model of just a guy at a restaurant with a table who clearly didn't have any like reservations because we just walked in and he was like, yes, here's table, sit. It came clear that like, first of all, he had some orders for like pickup. And then it turned out it was a little bit of a letdown.
A little bit of a letdown.
But 2/3 of the way through the time, some other people come in and we're like, okay, what's going to happen now?
Yeah, we were excited.
Yeah, we were excited to figure out what happened next. But like he slides the paper door kind of thing into this other room, which I will emphasize had maybe two tables.
There were two tables back there. Yeah.
But what was the real letdown is like, it was clear that we were put at the, let's call it the forks table.
Yeah. Yeah. There were two tables in the back that were like, you sit on the ground.
Yeah, like Japanese.
Which is the like more traditional Japanese way to do it seemingly. And we got put at the table for the Westerners who sat at a normal chair. And so that was a bit disappointing to learn that. But nonetheless, still I would say a 10 out of 10 experience.
Absolutely. Can't recommend it enough. This might actually be a case, well, we didn't put it in the episode, so I don't know. It'll just be like the layover heads. But like the size of this restaurant means that the layover heads can have a sizable impact on the one table restaurant's business.
This is true. This is true. Well, also because if you visit Japan, like if you fly into Narita, you're right there. Like you might as well stop by.
Yeah. You could literally do this on a layover.
Oh.
That's the name of the thing.
Big for the layover heads. Oh. Do it on a layover.
They love layovers.
But again, it's like less than a 10-minute train from the airport.
It absolutely ripped and rolled.
But yeah, delightful little spot. We also learned there that there's a Narita Airport beer.
Yep.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And it's like label is like a luggage tag. So it looks like, well, similar to actually the logo of this podcast. It's like a luggage tag, but it goes off on the end like a luggage tag too. It's delightful. Anyway.
Oh, final thing about the Narita overnight. We found a place called the Jet Lag Club.
Oh, I forgot about that. So much happened.
Oh my God.
Yes, the Jet Lag Club. And here's the thing about the Jet Lag Club. Okay, this is what the layover podcast is made for. These BTS things. But we were walking back from this delightful thing. And the Jet Lag Club out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what it turned out, so I looked it up and it's actually like pretty relevant because here's the thing. Narita Airport, because Narita is so far from Tokyo itself, which was some of my logic in hiding there, when pilots and flight crews have a layover, something again, in Narita, you know, between their flights, often they end up staying in Narita, the town, rather than staying in Tokyo itself. So it's like a disproportionate amount of the people staying in hotels in Narita, the town, are like pilots and stuff. Because here's the thing. By contract, they often have to stay in towns with like restaurants and stuff. So they're not allowed like by union rules sometimes to stay at like random airport hotels. So I imagine that's the reason why they stay here and not one of those random airport hotels. And especially Narita is a very big cargo hub too. So it turns out that this was like a bar that was like pretty much just for like flight crews and stuff on their layovers. And that's why it's called the Jet Lag Club. And that's cool. So it's like a bar for Westerners or predominantly Westerners seemingly because like everything's English language and stuff, but specifically flight crews. And here's the thing, breaking news regarding Jet Lag Club. I found another Jet Lag Club just like 2 weeks ago.
Whoa, where?
I was in Barcelona.
Ooh.
Right along the seafront, there was the entrance to a club that was called the Jet Lag Club. So I guess it's a thing. Anyways, maybe we should talk about the show.
Big stuff, big BTS though. I feel like we're always promising that we're going to talk about all this BTS. And then we often just focus on the episode. I think that we really delivered on the BTS in this episode of The Layover.
The BTS is good. I have nothing else to offer. I had a very stressful night. I thought I was going to have to sleep on the ground, but...
Right, because you, like, couldn't find a hotel, right?
Yes. I was sort of in the middle of nowhere, and it was very evident that I was not supposed to be out there at all, but...
Yeah, the region that you hid in was strange.
It was. It was, but you know what? I lived.
Yeah. Well, I think we should push that subject off for later because that's like relevant to our weird overnight.
It is.
But like it just felt strange.
Yeah.
In a way that was like unsettling.
Yes. Yes. The people will see. But I started. I'm in my ghillie suit. I'm by the cliffs. The beautiful cliffs.
Talk to us about the ghillie suit.
Yeah. Because let me define that question a little bit more. Because what's interesting about the ghillie suit, in my opinion, is the fact that we were filming for the longest stretch that we've ever filmed.
Yep.
And in a brutally hot environment where we're going to be like very sweaty, clothes really kind of degrading in condition quite quickly. So talk me through the thought process of dedicating a sizable portion of your backpack to ghillie suit.
Well, I thought it would be helpful. And time will tell if it ends up being helpful. I will admit that my plan was to use it in my first round because I knew I was going first. And I was like, great, I'll just use it on the first round and then I'll get rid of it.
Get rid of it, sure.
But then ultimately I was like, actually, because if you remember from my first round, there ended up being no places in the woods that were viable for me. And so I was like, oh, I actually can't really use the ghillie suit now. So now I have to save it for my next round, which was a big disappointment to me because I thought I could just toss it after day one. Alas, I could not.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't want to come across as a ghillie suit hater. I love it. I'm just concerned for your well-being and, you know, changes of socks.
I regret nothing. Look, I'm less bothered by weather than the both of you, I think.
Clearly.
Broadly speaking and historically.
Well, it's interesting because, like, Adam is terrified of the cold. I'm terrified of the heat, and you seem to just vibe with it.
Yeah.
It's true. I do hate the cold.
Yeah. Okay, so what do we do?
So anyway, you're there. We're at Narita Airport.
You're at the airport.
Yeah, so I mean, we start off with, I think, two questions that we have not asked yet because it was interesting and we tried to take advantage of this, right? We were like, we are quite a distance from a Shinkansen and from a major city and let's try to use that to our advantage. We're sort of a convenient distance.
Yeah, because especially the Shinkansen distance, we had never really been that far from a Shinkansen at the start of a round.
I don't think so. I guess we had been a decent distance at Ben's.
Not nearly as far.
But not nearly as far, no.
Because him, it was just whatever that nearest city was, which was only like a 15-minute train ride.
Yeah, I guess like max we would have been like 15 miles from a Shinkansen, which is not far enough for that question to be useful. When we were right in the middle of the two. So we do the double whammy, right? We do the 1-2 punch of, are you closer to or further from a major city?
Which ended up being quite useful because we were decently far from the nearest one.
We were.
And the answer was further.
Yes. I mean, I would argue that both answers would have been quite helpful, which is the mark of a good question.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this was helpful in the sense that it was like, okay, now we don't have to worry at all about the greater Tokyo area, which is always great to not have to deal with that.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, I really didn't want to deal with the Tokyo metro area. Not because it's necessarily that hard, it's just annoying.
Yes. And then with the Shinkansen, it's like he was closer, which is a good combo because it's like, okay, so you're close to a Shinkansen, but you're far from a city. And that starts to limit places a decent amount, right?
It really does. And then the airport one.
Yeah, that one was the linchpin, if I'm using that word right.
Yeah.
The airport one was the huge one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because with that being a yes, I mean, you saw in the episode, that just narrowed things down so much.
Yeah.
That was big. That was big time for us, certainly. I mean, you see our reaction. We're like, this is huge.
Yeah. This is the moment that we were referring to earlier when we were like, oh, this is going to be an easy one.
Where we were so back.
And I think the moments where we're like, oh, is this...
Yeah.
I will say that, like, these three questions really alarmed me. And, like, perhaps more so than I even let across on camera. But it's just, like, when you get asked unfamiliar questions, when the seekers aren't going for a conventional strategy, you're like, uh-oh, like, what have they cooked up, you know? Like,
right.
Have they figured out something new? Because, honestly, like, in Switzerland... When you guys started with the, like, first letter town name thing, I was like, this is a completely new strategy that I've never even thought of. And it ended up being so powerful. So this really scared me. And, I mean, evidently, it was quite effective. I think there is a configuration of those answers where it would have been kind of whatever.
No, it was certainly like you were a bit unlucky. Or your spot was just kind of one that was highly vulnerable to this kind of combo of questions.
Totally.
Well, I'd have to say you were especially unlucky on the airport one.
Yeah, that one was brutal. Mm-hmm.
That's tough. That really narrowed things a lot.
Because especially like at this point, at least for me, and clearly this was wrong, but at least for me, when I looked at the map at this point, it just felt like these regions were so small.
Right. Well, that's the funny thing.
Yeah. It felt like, oh, all I need to do is just... Because, like...
This is tiny. Like...
Yeah. And, like, previously, when we'd had it narrowed down that much,
right.
It was right. Fairly straightforward to just go there, ask some precision questions, and
yeah.
Lock it down.
Not so much this time.
No.
I mean... After this question, though, this is the beginning of us making mistakes, of course, though. So, well, we do tallest mountain from train station because I think we want to check and see if it's Mount Fuji.
Yeah, the tallest mountain. I was really keen on this question. I'm a mountain expert. Adam clearly didn't trust my expertise. but I can psychoanalyze mountains.
Here's what I'll say. You are better at analyzing this kind of stuff than I am. I feel like it just doesn't quite click for me as much, the photo analysis, in the way that it does for you.
I love the photo analysis.
Where you will do, I feel like, more of a, like, check out the satellite map, compare it to the photo, and draw confident conclusions from it.
I think it's so fun. Clearly you can't, like, well, unless the thing that happened the past episode or with your one happens, like, you can never be 100% with the photos. But I feel like time has proven that you can often get to, like, strong feeling that something is the right direction. And then with that, you can really accurately, you know, lock it down with some smart other questions, with some strong theories.
Yeah.
This mountain one, though, was not the most useful because it was kind of just like lumpy.
No.
I mean, it was only useful by what it excluded, but we had seen like lumpy wooded mountains like this all over the country.
This told us not that much.
They're kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
It was quite lucky that there were mountains at all where I was, because I think that, like, if I was not able to send a picture of any mountains, that would have excluded the entirety of the next region that you go check out for the most part.
Yeah.
When we head north, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, or I guess we head more west, but yeah.
Anyways, so it's worth noting that we continue the streak of taking the Shinkansen in the complete wrong direction this episode.
Yes. This is the third time in a row that we confidently hop on the Shinkansen and we go the wrong way.
Which, like, none of the times it was like they're 100% this way. It's always just like, Shinkansen's fast, might as well check it out.
Right.
You know, and kind of like 50-50 shot, but we got the 50-50 shot wrong three times in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is funny that the one time that we decided to be extra careful and make sure before we got on a Shinkansen was in round one, where what we were going to do actually was right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, honestly, a lot of the reason for losing so many of those 50-50s was because I think, like, there was, like, a line of logic that all of us were going through when we were looking for hiding spots. I mean, maybe you guys weren't doing this, but I was certainly doing this, where there was, like, one kind of obvious place to go. And then you're like, well, I can't go to the one really obvious place to go. And I think for me, that was like Nagano. Like, my first impulse was like, go around Nagano, which is where you guys went and checked.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I can't do that because that was my first impulse. So I have to do something else. And I think that so often you have to just go check the first impulse most sensible place.
Well, and I think sort of echoing that, like, I'm pretty sure that in each of those three instances, we were taking the Shinkansen into the geographically larger region that was still possible, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I believe that's right.
And the Hyder ended up being in, like, that small additional sliver that we were initially like, what are the odds of them being there?
Because we were like, well, we're just playing the odds. We were like, let's look at these regions that are left. Like, 20% of the region, 30% maybe, is south, and like 70% is north, northwest. And it was like, well, go to the likely area, right? I mean, I remember that we have all this footage, we even acknowledge it later, where we're like, well, it'll sure be funny if he's in this little weird area here. Wouldn't that be convenient for Ben? And then it's like, well, of course he's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ben, talk to us about the Teddy Bear Museum.
Yeah, I went to the Teddy Bear Museum. Teddy bears were kind of a motif for the whole town. And I couldn't tell if the town had something to do with teddy bears or just the presence of the Teddy Bear Museum made the town kind of enamored with teddy bears. Because, like, you'll sort of see this in subsequent clips later and maybe in clips throughout this episode where, like, I go eat at a cafe and there are teddy bears everywhere in the cafe. Or, like, in the train station, there are teddy bears all over the wall. But either way, this town loves teddy bears, which I think is sweet.
Well, it seemed to us, like, we, I think, sort of picked up through our time in this area was that this seemed to be, like, a weekend getaway spot for Tokyoites or whatever.
Yes, yes. I mean, people have, I'm sure, figured this out, that it's, like, it's a small place. It's not a big spot. And it's, like, kind of touristy, but it's not for, like, foreigners.
Very much not.
I think, Sam, that you were right that, like, I think that this is a place where, like, Japanese people have, like, beach houses.
Yeah.
Is my guess. And that, like, I think it sees very little foreign tourism.
Yeah, certainly seemed that way. And it also seemed like it was not a busy time there.
No.
So it was a bit, like, abandoned. And everything was just, like, empty.
Super empty. Well, you can see how, like, big the train station is. It's, like, huge.
Yeah.
Relative to a very otherwise small town, which made the whole thing feel quite spooky. But yeah, seemingly the one, like, touristy thing they had there besides, like, the cliffs and beaches and stuff was just this teddy bear museum, which was great. It was a great, super thorough museum. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, when I saw the footage, I was amazed by it. Well, it also had, like, some very cool Studio Ghibli stuff. Like, it had the cat bus, which is very fun.
Yeah, it had this whole Studio Ghibli exhibit that had all these dioramas. It was crazy.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It was, yeah, certainly an interesting spot. But Adam and I were narrowing in.
Well, here's something that I'd like to say about as we're moving is, like, I think that, Ben, you in this round, you use your cards quite well. As we get into this next
True.
Section.
Well, I think he did in both rounds.
Oh, well, I know. Oh, well, certainly in both rounds.
Yeah.
Today is the day that episode 2 went up on Nebula, and I'm seeing a lot of people very upset with me for not using my veto cards,
oh,
which
yeah.
I actually will defend. I actually think I justify in episode, like, you guys could have gotten the information very easily in another way, such that, like, I actually don't think the vetoes would have been effective, but...
Reddit just, like, saying things, you know?
I thought that was very interesting because that didn't even occur to me when I was watching back your footage. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But it's like, yeah, I've seen so many people, like, which is good. I mean, it's good. You want people engaging with the gameplay. It's good.
Yeah. But yeah, we head up there and we are like, well, let's confirm. At this point, we're like barely even considering that area southwest of us. And we're like, let's figure out which of the two Shinkansens he's on. And then, Ben, I think that doing the randomize on a 3-card draw question is really smart.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah.
Because it means that if we want to re-ask it, then you basically got 3 free cards. Like, I think that it's very smart to use it on that as opposed to a photo, all other things being equal, given the card advantage that you get.
Well, the other thing about doing it on, like, a matching or measuring question, and this is something that I, like, hadn't considered until we started playing, is that you have a much higher chance of rolling into a question that the seekers will need later.
Yes.
And that they can't use effectively then. Whereas, like, photos are the same amount of useful the whole time, basically. But, like, there are certain matching and measuring questions that are critical at certain junctions of the game and totally useless at others. And that is what happened here. I hit a question that was useless, but will be useful later.
No, it was really the best of both worlds. It was like that question, as we've noted, super useful later. And now if we want to ask it, it's going to cost us double, right? Later on. So very effective use of randomize.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we eliminate Nagano, that whole shebang.
Yeah.
And then we spend a lot of time, but not a lot of runtime in the episode, getting to a Tommy.
Well, you're skipping over a little bit. We eliminate Nagano, but then Niigata is still in play.
Yeah.
And that's why we do that thermometer.
Yeah. But we eliminate all those northern things, take the Shinkansen back to Tokyo. We were somewhat struck by anomalous Shinkansen delays this day.
We were.
We didn't, I think, include a whole lot of that.
No, because it didn't matter that much.
Yeah, but it was the only time that, like, we lost time, really, because of Shinkansen's yes. being delayed. It's very, very yes. not normal. I think we only ended up losing about 30 minutes mm-hmm. on our way to Atami, but not something that happens much in this game in Japan.
Well, one thing I do want to mention, though, before we move on to Atami, is just about that thermometer, because I think it's really interesting what happened with it, which is that we kind of messed up with it. Like, we thought that the angle of it was going to be different than it was. And then it turned out the angle was actually not very good.
Yeah.
And we were confident that it was going to be hotter. But then the fact that it was colder meant that it was like, oh my God, now we've really narrowed down the area. Like, we didn't mean to ask that question in that way, but then it turned out that it was amazing that we asked it in that way because it narrowed things down a huge amount for us, which was sort of interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so now we get to a Tommy.
Now to Tommy.
Look, this roll five or higher thing, where we have to throw it, what, 100 feet, I think?
100 feet.
Yeah.
It was partially the geography of a Tommy that made it tricky because, like, it was, like, this town kind of built into, like, a hill. So that meant that there were no, like, if we had been at Tokyo Station, this would have been super easy because we would have this, like, massive square that we could have done this in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But just, like, a Tommy just didn't have very many big open spaces near the station.
No.
So it first took us a while to find a good spot. And then we just had the worst string of luck. Like, someone should do the math on how improbable the number of, like, times that we didn't roll five or higher was. I guess, you know, in retrospect, the mistake was having Adam roll Mr.
Turns out that the luck has just, I'm terrible at rolling now.
Yeah.
The dice luck was tough.
Well, rolling slash flipping coins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out.
Yeah.
Turns out. I feel like conventional wisdom had always been Sam is the unlucky one when it comes to this stuff. And I think the paradigm has shifted.
I think I've broken the curse.
Yeah.
Somehow. I don't know. But yeah, so that took a little bit. It was a bit harrowing, the spot that we found, because we were like dodging cars, but in a totally safe way, totally safe and responsible way, because we're so safe and responsible. And then we have to do the Cairns thing, which was...
No.
I expected that to be much more of a nightmare than it was.
Wait, you're skipping quite far ahead, Sam.
What am I skipping?
Well, you get jammed first.
Oh, yeah, we get jammed, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was lucky that we were in the station already.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Lucky that we were in the station.
Unlucky that you managed to pull this again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, ultimately, I was banking on these curses to buy me a lot of time. And actually, certainly the die rolling one bought me more time than I expected, because that one was harder than I think any of us thought it would be. But the jams were not as bad this time.
The full consequences of the jams we can't really talk about in this episode.
No, we can't.
And I think that's ambiguous enough to not make it a spoiler.
This is true.
Anyways.
Curse of the Cairn, though. I mean...
You guys clear it so fast.
A moment that I'm proud of.
Yeah, it was some good Cairning action. Yeah, I'll admit that I was skeptical and I was proved wrong at the ability to complete it that quickly. Because I've built a Cairn or two in my time. I think what helped was that the rocks that we were using were not out in the woods, basically. And when you're out in the woods, you get much more curvy rocks. So that helped.
Yeah. When I got 9, I was like, this is going to take them forever.
I was impressed that you got 9 too, yeah.
Well, I had so much setup time. Like, I had so much time to find those big rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, what was really amazing was that Adam was stacking rocks of, like, the same size on each other for, like, most of the tower, which I didn't even really realize you could do.
I was amazing at stacking rocks.
You were. You were. So you clear that right up. And then what?
That one, nice and easy. Nice and easy.
And we're back to the station.
Back to the station. Well, no. Well, I guess on our way back to the station, we do the tentacles.
Yes.
And this is where things start to take a turn for the worse.
Because we thought the tentacle would hit.
We certainly did. We certainly expected that the tentacle would hit. We didn't think it was 100%, but we were sort of like, we could do a radar. Or we could do a tentacle. And we were like, we think there's, I don't know, 70% chance the tentacle hits. So it's like, I don't want to have to do a radar and then do a tentacle.
Yeah.
So let's just do the tentacle. And that serves as a radar either way. And so we were like, it's going to totally make sense. And then this is where, of course, and this is in the episode, so we can say it. The tentacle misses you, Ben, by, I mean, I believe that it actually cuts into your hiding zone.
It does. There are places I could have been standing physically in my zone where it would have hit. Barely.
Yeah.
I believe that you missed me by only like a third of a mile or something. Which is why, like, I always feel so dumb when we're like working out the like extremely nitty gritty rules of how all of these things work. But this is an example of like,
they come up.
We had worked out, like, is the radar touch your zone or does it touch you? And if you're standing elsewhere, like, It's a good thing that we had sorted all of that out.
Yeah.
So for clarity, I mean, it's where you physically are when you answer the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had been in the tentacle area, I could have theoretically, like, run.
In the 5 minutes you have to answer, you could have run away from it and answered.
Yeah.
Yeah, which would have been crazy.
Kind of frustrating to hear all this.
But, you know, the audience has got to know these things because this could come up in your games, certainly.
Yeah. So without a miss, we decide we need to head west because with what we knew, it seemed like all the viable options left were to the west.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, there were theoretically two lines that we thought he could have been on, but one just really character-wise did not seem right in the slightest because it was like right on the coast and you could tell from the satellite view that there were just no mountains of any size anywhere close. So it seemed impossible that Ben could have gotten the photo of mountains.
Except for Mount Fuji.
Right.
Which I think you can see from some of those coastal towns. So yeah, it was the area west or the Gotemba line up north. And I remember it was like, you know, these seaside areas, they're just too far. It's not even that there aren't mountains, because there are mountains, but like you can see Mount Fuji from them, and the mountains are far away and Fuji's far away. And it was clear from Ben's picture that he was very close to whatever it was he had taken a picture of. And this, I'll say, this was all you, Sam. This was you identifying this, like, based on satellite. I was like, I could be either one. And you were like very confident, like on the mountain.
A mountain expert.
Situation. So yeah, so we head west.
And that is pretty much where we end?
That's where we end. I mean, we have a moment where Ben, I mean, Ben, talk to us about your headspace here because the episode ends on you.
Yeah. Well, so after you had done that tentacle, I was convinced that you would know exactly where I was.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for reasons that I can't quite say. But like, basically, I thought that it like cut off everything else you were considering besides my one town. And so I was like, uh-oh, okay, their next move is going to be to come here. And so I was actually quite busy looking for a hiding spot. And it is not until you do that radar until I realized that you had gone a direction I did not expect you to go. And so it was at that point that I was like, it's not that they know exactly where I am. They might actually be quite confused at this point. So I don't know. We'll see. Look, we'll see what happens. There is not a lot of map left, but sometimes this part of the game is the very hardest.
Yep. Anyways,
I think that's where we have to leave it.
You'll see how this concludes next time. Probably. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not.
Maybe this is just the rest of the season.
Could be.
Who knows?
Be interesting.
Probably be a pretty boring rest of the season, except for Adam and I's slow descent into, I don't know, something. Anyways, bye, maybe? I don't know.
See you next week.
Bye.